it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Matt Cream of 24/7 Sports is just terrific on Oregon football. Make sure you follow Matt on Twitter. Make sure you read what he has to say, and make sure you catch him when he's on this show. Matt Cream, right now, set the scene.
Go say that again. You broke up.
Where are you right now? Set the scene.
I am in my bedroom, door closed. Wife is on a conference call. Oldest child is on a Zoom class call, and my youngest is taking a break from school because he's got PE coming up in about an hour.
How does that work now? Because I know you will soon be on media availability with Mario Cristobal and coordinators, and you'll do what media members do in 2020. But do you have to tell the kids, "Hey, Dad's working now," or what's the protocol in your household?
John, to give you an idea of how this is going, we are actively looking at buying a new house. We need more space in our house.
I realize this.
That was evident before COVID. You add a dog that we thought was going to be 60 pounds and he's more like 100. You add COVID with school, wife home from work as well. All of a sudden, a house that in a Monday through Friday that was completely quiet for me is full of people, full of energy. I love it, but we need more space. So we closed the door. I work from various parts of the house, wherever I can find a quiet spot. And when it's Zoom press conferences, I usually go to my desk and say, no one can come remotely close to me for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports with us. Oregon struggled with UCLA. Chip Kelly had his way offensively, and I think if he had just, you know, taken a knee before half, this possibly could have been a loss at home for Oregon, but they found a way to win. Let's start with the positive. They were gritty. They found a way to win. How concerned, though, are you about the way that they did win?
Yeah, I mean, UCLA, Osa Adegazua, I can never say that name. He's a dude, kid from Portland. He is an NFL player, and one in which I think will be picked in the earlier rounds of that NFL draft coming up in the spring. He's a terror, and he caused a lot of problems up front for Oregon. I'm pretty concerned because you look at Oregon's first two opponents, Stanford, Washington State. They are the two worst teams in the conference in rushing defense. They are the bottom of the barrel in the Pac-12 and total defense, scoring points per game allowed. They're middle of the pack, but nonetheless, they give up a lot of yards. UCLA, they are better than their 1-2 record indicates. They are top three in the conference in total defense. They're top three in the conference in rushing defense. Their passing defense is solid. And they stymied Oregon's front line, and one in which, quite honestly, they dominated the first two opponents. But we're starting to see maybe that it could be because Stanford and Washington State defensively are just not very good. And Oregon was just simply better. And it's going to be real – I'm really curious to see how they come out and play against Oregon State. I realize the Beaver defense isn't this juggernaut, but Oregon's got a lot of issues on both sides of the football, and I once thought this game was going to be a blowout in favor of Oregon. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a blowout anymore.
Spread opened up yesterday at 16.5. I had the same reaction, Matt. Like, I don't know if I'm willing to go out. Yeah, I don't know if I could say Oregon State's going to win this game. I'm not there. But it's closer than 16.5 in my mind.
I look at this and think, Oregon in all three straight games has at some points in the first two, and then for the most part against UCLA, their front seven has been blown up. And they've had some big chunk plays given up on the ground. And I look at Oregon State, and you're playing against the conference's best running back, Jamar Jefferson. He leads the conference in rushing touchdowns with five. He's fourth in the conference in yards per carry, but that's only because the three guys ahead of him in that category combined don't equal the number of carries he's had on the season. And then he leads the conference in total yards from a rushing perspective. Jamar Jefferson will be the best running back that they face. And if I'm Oregon State, Jamar Jefferson needs to touch the ball 30, 40 times in this football game because he's your best player. And he's at a position in which Oregon's had some difficulty stopping the run. And that feels like their weak point right now.
Oregon lost a lot. Like, I know we said that before the season, but we looked at their recruiting classes and we just expected they would backfill with four and five star guys. But they're young guys, and now we've got some injuries on top of it. The Noah Sewell injury, particularly concerning. I know Mario Cristobal downplayed it a little bit in the postgame, but what is your assessment? What did you see? What do you think's going on with Noah Sewell?
Well, this is, you know, Cristobal's going to get asked about this here in about 20 minutes. This is interesting. One of his assistant non-position coaches, every day before practice, does an Instagram live, kind of showing the team walking out to the practice field doing their warm-ups. Noah Sewell in pads with a brace on his knee going through warm-up. Now, it could be all show. It could be all show. But he left the game with one crutch and a walking boot on. And typically, when you see a guy get carted off, he doesn't return to the sidelines. He doesn't walk off the field under his own power after the game is over if he does return to the sideline, which wouldn't make any sense for him to anyways. So I look at that as all interesting nuggets. We'll try and glean something from Cristobal. I mean, his own program put out some kind of video with him in pads at practice. So I think it's safe to say he should be able to at least address that. Probably won't happen again moving forward. But if he can't play, that's a big loss because he's your most physical linebacker. I think he's probably your top two in terms of just overall production. Isaac Slade, Matuatia, I still believe is probably your best linebacker. But the gap between Sewell and him is, was swimming down every week. And I don't think Drew Mathis is nearly as good as Sewell has been.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is our guest. UCLA's defensive front did a lot of stunting. They did a lot of movement pre-snap. They were stemming. It was problematic for Oregon's young, big offensive line. Do you have any indication that Oregon can shore that up? I expect Oregon State, which is not overly physical at the point of attack, is going to watch some film on this and go, hey, movement is the name of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I look at all of Oregon's issues and up front, like you said, stemming and stunting and rotating our guys and showing the movement was a big issue. But I think Oregon's issues this season, I don't look at them as, hey, they're physical issues or they don't have the talent to match up. They just aren't good enough. It's a scheme thing right now. It's a technique thing right now. And for Oregon, luckily, that stuff's fixable. I think they have the talent to be really good and to be dominant and to be elite. It's just they're not there yet. They need the reps. They need the time. And so if I'm Oregon, I look at these issues and up front what they have along the offensive line, and I say, yeah, we can fix this, but we don't have a lot of time to get it done, so we got to figure it out. And one interesting thing is the first three games of the year, they've rotated their offensive line. Alex Forsythe is the only one that plays the same position every series, every drive that they have the football at center. It goes in about a series of two. Every two possessions they have, they come out with a new different lineup. Some guys are going from tackle to guard. A guy's going from guard to tackle. And part of me is wondering, okay, that's been helpful. You're getting a lot of experience. Guys are getting prepped in case of COVID happens. But at some point, you kind of have to figure out your group. And you have to roll with that unit so that they get into a rhythm and they get into a best case scenario where they're comfortable at that spot because they're not, okay, I'm here now. What's the adjustment I need to make here? And they're doing a lot of thinking and just playing. So I'm going to ask Cristobal that. At what point do you stop doing this, like, every two-possession rotation along the offensive line and putting guys in different spots, or do you think you can continue to do that and not see a drop-off?
It's interesting because I trust that they will get it figured out. The schedule's been friendly to them because, like you pointed out, Stanford, Washington State, UCLA, Oregon State, that's not the toughest start for Oregon. And yet they're facing, I think, a stretch here where it'll be Oregon State. It will be, you know, obviously they've got the game with Washington looming that Washington fans are excited about. You know, everybody thinking at the beginning of the year, conference favorite in the North. I'm suddenly seeing some vulnerabilities. What is the biggest vulnerability you see with Oregon?
I look at their defense and their tackling. They aren't, that was a sure thing last year for them. And you knew that they would take the right pursuit angles and that if it was a one-on-one situation, you felt confident that that guy could at least wrap him up and hold him there and wait for everybody else to come finish the play. This year, they're missing tackles. They're not even taking the best pursuit angles possible. And I think we're really seeing the effects of maybe losing your three or four best tacklers on the team. Troy Dye graduated. He was your best sure tackler. Brady Breeze, Javon Holland were just unbelievable tacklers. And then Thomas Graham, while playing corner, was stout. And he hardly ever gave up a tackle in one-on-one situations. And so you at worst, you lose three of your maybe four or five best tacklers from last season, and they just haven't been able to make that up. And that's my biggest concern is, Can you get in a position where you make the tackles, you make the stops, you get guys wrapped up and hold on for the rest of the team to come finish off the play? Because, you know, first play of the game against UCLA, Jamal Hill in position for a 2 or 3 yard tackle for loss, missed Demetric Felton, and it went for like 12 yards. I mean, that happens way too much right now for Oregon.
We're talking to Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports. All right, how do you see this game? I know we don't know injuries. You know, in this era, we've learned to wait until Thursday to declare there's even going to be a game. But if these teams play at Research Stadium on Friday, how do you see this game? Is it a game in the 20s? Is it a game in the 30s? Is it a one-score game? How do you see it?
I think it's played in the high 30s. I think Oregon probably dips into the low 40s. And it's going to be a game in which I think right now, my gut is saying it's going to be like a 6 to a 9 point win for Oregon. It's going to be one in which in the fourth quarter, you're thinking this game is in doubt. It's still up for grabs for either team. And I wasn't expecting to say that 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. I think that speaks volumes to maybe Oregon State's offense and what they've been able to do with Jamar Jefferson. I also speaks volumes to the lack of production that we're seeing defensively from Oregon on their side of the ball too.
Yeah, I think it's way close. Like I expect 16.5 to be more like 9.5 by kickoff. I think we're going to see a huge swing.
Yeah, that's about right.
Matt Preem, I appreciate you. Follow Matt Preem on Twitter. Read him on 24/7 Sports and hear him on this show. Thank you, Preem.
Yep, no problem.
There he is. He's off to his Zoom call with Mario Cristobal. Yeah, I don't. I was a little puzzled after Saturday night's game. On one hand, credit to Chip Kelly, credit to UCLA, thought they did a lot of things right, show up shorthanded with a backup quarterback, and you took Oregon to the mattresses. I mean, Oregon, down to the wire in this game, had to be feeling a little vulnerable. And Duck fans, I know, you watched your team that had run the football so well last season, averaged less than 3 yards a carry against UCLA. I thought, to steal a metaphor, I thought Oregon won the sack race. I thought Oregon won the egg toss at this picnic. I thought Oregon won the picnic, barely. But I think UCLA won the tug of war, and that's the first time Mario Cristobal as coach at Oregon, I had seen Oregon at the point of attack get beat, dominated, pushed around. And this was not LSU pushing them around. This was not Auburn or Alabama pushing Oregon around. This was UCLA, Chip Kelly, finesse, right, so to speak, that was just at the point of attack on both sides of the ball, UCLA won the game there. And if Chip Kelly takes a knee before halftime instead of trying to, in no man's land, make something happen and ends up with a pick six the other way, I mean, he gifted Oregon 7 points right before the half. If Chip Kelly just takes a knee, he probably wins this game or forces Oregon at least late in the fourth quarter to have to drive and win the game. Would not have been a comfortable position for the Ducks to be in. Oregon is undefeated, remains undefeated, has this cushy schedule the rest of the way. They play Oregon State, they play Cal, then they get the game, the test against Washington. I'm not in a position right now where I can pick Oregon State to win this, but Oregon State can run the football. Oregon State can make some plays on defense. Suddenly on Saturday night, I watched Oregon State win against Cal. I watched Oregon barely win against UCLA. And I thought, good for both teams, that's great. But I also thought, we suddenly have a civil war. Because I would have called this a two-score, Oregon wins this game, blowing away contest maybe a week ago. Now I'm going, gosh, I think Oregon State can run the ball. I think Tristan Jebbia can make some plays. I know Oregon State's offense is a little bit limited. And I think Jebbia's got to make some plays down the field if Oregon State's going to have a shot to win this game against Oregon. But I'm suddenly going, this game is not a it's not a runaway. I think Oregon, and I wrote it off the opener, and a Duck fans got mad at me. They said, oh, you're so negative. You're so down on Oregon. Why do you do this? I was not impressed with their win over Stanford in the opener. I thought Stanford was very mediocre. I thought Oregon played right to their level for most of that game before pulling away. I thought Oregon was a little better in week two. And in week three, they regressed right back to week one against a UCLA team that they should have beat going away. It was a bad indicator. I suddenly don't think Oregon is going to win the Pac-12 conference. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope Oregon suddenly pivots. Mario Cristobal gets his offensive line all on the same page. And defensively, they start tackling people and making plays, and Noah Sewell's healthy. I'd love to be wrong about that. But I left Saturday night going, a lot of questions in Eugene. And suddenly, some optimism in Corvallis. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Nick Aliotti, former Oregon defensive coordinator, will be joining us this week. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State head coach, will be with us. We'll get the quarterback, Tristan Jebbia, on the show as well. We are on, obviously, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. Thursday, you are going to get some national programming as part of Thanksgiving. Sorry, I'm not doing this radio show on Thursday. You shouldn't be listening to this radio show on Thursday. You should be with your family. Friday is the Oregon-Oregon State game, the game called Not the Civil War. I'm having a hard time with that, and I know a lot of people out there are divided on what to call this game. Nobody agrees what to call this game. I've had this discussion internally at the Oregonian with editors as well, because there are so many references to the Civil War in our coverage over the years. Do we call it the game formerly known as the Civil War? Do we call it the Civil War until they give it a new name? I know Oregon and Oregon State aren't using the name. Does that mean media need to stop using the name? I know with bowl games, we allow the bowl games to call themselves what they should be, but we all still call it the Gator Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl, or, you know, we don't use Tostitos or the Weed Whacker Bowl or the Azuña Tequila Red Box Bowl. I don't know. Whatever you want to call it, you call it. What are you doing in your household? How are you feeling about this week? Does it feel like a rivalry week? Does it feel abnormal? Because I think for some people, it's a slice of normalcy, right? Here comes the game. You're used to having this game in the way that it is, you know, disseminated to you. For others, it's, this doesn't feel normal because I'm not going to be at the stadium. Or it doesn't feel normal because nothing's felt normal about this year. 503-417-7575 is the number. You get a chance to weigh in on this. Bruce is in Portland, going to lead us off. Bruce, how you doing this week?
John, not too bad. And you? Sounds like
good. I'm well. I have no complaints. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks. Trying to figure out Thanksgiving. been an Oregon resident and a Duck fan for 50-plus years. Been to and watched the Civil War for about that long. The only normal thing is it usually happens, you know, the day after Thanksgiving or the weekend after Thanksgiving. I'm a lifelong Duck and a season ticket holder. I am worried about the Ducks and watching those first three games. I mean, they've been mediocre at best. They have moments of brilliance, but then they have moments that they fall back into, like, what the heck's going on? A young team, I guess. Tyler Shuck is, you know, the guy needs to get more consistent from the beginning. He's got moments of brilliance, too, but then he just, like, what the hell is he doing, you know? I'm worried about their kicking game, John. I mean, if they get into these close games and a field goal is going to decide the game, I mean, Lewis is like, that guy's confidence has got to be zero right now. Their punting game is not good. Their place-kicking game is not good. They can't put it out of the back of the end zone to save their lives, you know? It's going to be interesting. I think the Ducks are still the better team this weekend. I think they're still going to find a way to win, as they will probably throughout most of the season. But they better get it together. And like the analyst said earlier, they need to work on tackling. It's very apparent watching their defense play. But 3-0 is 3-0, so let's go.
Yeah, look, this radio station you're listening to is not home of the Ducks. It's not home of the Beavers. This show is not going to be home of anything but the truth. And what you're going to get here is not spoon-fed coverage that is the company line that you would get with flagship stations. You're just not going to get that. So, objectively, there are problems across the Pac-12 with the kicking game. There are problems across the Pac-12 with tackling. There are problems across the Pac-12, frankly, with games just getting played. Mario Cristobal, just a few minutes ago, just said Noah Sewell practiced today and looks normal to me. People are going to say, is this him, you know, sandbagging in front of a rivalry game? Or is Noah Sewell, who got carted off, really ready to go? I think we'll wait and see. That's what I've learned. But here's the problem with the Oregon Ducks right now. The Oregon Ducks right now are like a lot of teams that are incomplete. It still looks like they're like playing game three of their non-conference schedule. If this were a normal 12-game schedule and this were game two or three and they showed some vulnerabilities, we would all sit back and we would all go, Mario Cristobal will figure it out. Because he does. He's a good coach. That coaching staff is a good coaching staff. I believe in that coaching staff. I think they will figure it out. Problem is, in this season, you don't have a lot of time for that. It's going to be Oregon State. It's going to be Cal. It's going to be Washington. Then there will be a crossover game that, you know, a seeded game that, you know, is potentially them playing either Colorado or USC or somebody like that on the other side of the bracket. And then it's on to whatever, you know, postseason game that they can merit. I think the biggest blow to Oregon on Saturday was that their college football playoff hopes, I think, died Saturday on the field as they beat UCLA in a very unimpressive victory for Oregon. On one hand, I think Oregon fans are relieved that they got that victory. On the other hand, I think Oregon fans are probably well aware that this is not a team that you would like to see play Alabama or Notre Dame. It's not the year. It's not the time. If you're Oregon, you want to play those games when you feel like you're ready and you're at your best. Because right now, I think anybody in the Pac-12 plays against the top teams in the SEC, the ACC, gets boat raced, gets just drilled and driven off the field. And I believe that. I don't think USC could hold water on the field. I don't think Oregon could hold water on the field. I think it's a class mismatch right now. And in this year, in this season, if I'm the Ducks, if I'm somebody else, I don't want that game. Not now. I wanted that game if Penei Sewell's healthy. I wanted that game if Oregon had its secondary with Brady Breeze and everybody and Thomas Graham Jr. And that's the game I want Oregon in. But the fact of the matter is they're playing with backups at key positions. They're playing young on the offensive line. Defensively, they're really young in some spots, but talented. Like, you could see the future. I think it's still a year to 2 years away for Oregon to want to be in that game. And yet here they are. I want your Civil War memories, your Oregon-Oregon State rivalry memories. See, I just did it again. 503-417-7575. You weigh in. Got a great show ahead. We're going to talk about a variety of things, including whether or not BYU is being foolish. Are they being foolish? Are they a contender? Are they about to get left out? We'll talk about that later in the show as well. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.